when we get a touch of liberation, when we get, and when I say liberation, I mean the internal freedom that we know we are being who we are meant to be. We are being who we came here to be. And I don't feel that 100% of the time, but if I can just touch it for a second, all that fear and anxiety gets put into its place. It has a place that's purposeful. And you see for a second, oh my gosh, my intuition is probably the only source that I can trust to that degree.
Welcome to Settling is Bullshit, a sweary podcast about claiming your joy. If you are an adult human craving healthier boundaries, a greater sense of purpose, or an increased capacity to feel at ease in your own skin, then you are in the right place, my friend. I'm your host, Kate Blauk, and I'm here to offer you practical tools and playful encouragement to help you step forward and be your most awesome self. My hope is that each episode will leave you feeling a bit more empowered to make brave choices and claim your joy. Hello, my dear. Today's guest is Andrea Lita, a depth coach who has been in private practice since 2011 and an advocate for an inwardly big life that values presence over productivity, depth over status, and authentic connection over external validation. I have worked with Andrea directly as a coach and in her workshops and have really benefited both from her message and her approach to coaching. And she also got a shout out in our October episode with Julie Miller. She's built a really lovely community of coaches and women committed to living the lives that we were meant for. We recorded this episode back in November, and as a consequence of the election, it ended up being a more political conversation than you usually hear around here. And I think it's wonderful. Andrea's work is really focused on getting connected to ourselves and to our intuition and to what is really meant for us here in this world. And it was really nice to think about that in the context of intuition as a radical practice, as a liberatory practice, as a political act. So this is, in a lot of ways, a conversation about how the personal is political and how the more we can connect with who we really are and what we really want to be doing in the world on a daily, small, local level, the bigger impact that we're going to have, and that is a way to show up, and it is what we can do. So especially with it now being 2025 and the political circus that is on our horizon, this episode feels especially timely, and I really hope that you leave feeling hopeful and excited about connecting with your own intuition and connecting with who you're meant to be in this world. Because as Andrea will talk about, like, we are all built for something here. And our work is finding that place and really going all in on it. I genuinely believe that if we all trusted our own intuition just a little bit more and trusted ourselves just a little bit more, man, life would be a lot better. So I hope this leaves you feeling as inspired as it has left me after just having re-listened to it while I was editing it for your listening pleasure. You know, when we set this up, it was like, let's talk about intuition around the end of the year.
Yes.
Current political climate is part of what's happening at the end of the year.
Yeah, tis.
And I think that there is a degree to which, just like intuition as political activism or something could be like a fun direction to take this, right?
I love that title. I don't know what it means, but I'm intrigued, and we could figure out what it means.
Right. Well, you've talked, you know, like you've talked about intuition is part of women's lib.
Yes.
And so, ergo, if we connect those dots, right?
Well, sure, because reclamation of our intuition is an acknowledgement that it is a valid, powerful, wise, informative source that we ought to be living in relationship to. And for women, any reclamation of anything that doesn't come from outside of us is liberatory work.
Ooh. I just had a little like body yummy sensation when you said like anything. So reclamation of anything that doesn't come from outside of ourselves is
liberatory work.
Is liberatory work. Ooh.
And it gets me so excited.
Yeah. Okay. Tell me more about that. Let's go.
That's the call of the times. That's the need of the moment. That's the urgent call of the moment. You know, if we look at this last election, and I'm not going to quote statistics. I'm not going to pull exit poll data. I'm not equipped to do that. So I'm going to be very clear. My understanding and my intuitive sense of what is happening and what has been happening in our country and in our culture. Yes, we have a fortification of the system of patriarchy, but we also have a fortification of misogyny inside of our bodies. And when you have a significant, to the tune of millions, 15, 20 million supposed progressive voters actively not voting for a woman and a Black woman at that, there's only one outcome that I am comfortable saying, oh, this is what happened.
Yeah.
Right? So we are living in this moment. We are living at this moment. So it is the call of the times.
Is to connect more deeply with our intuition.
Is to connect more deeply with being a woman.
Mm.
And not being a woman as fortified by the patriarchy. And to be frank, do we even know what it means to be deeply steeped in our feminine self? Not really, because we've been living in a system that is cast that into the shadow for thousands of years. So I don't even know what that means, except how we're living it out ain't it.
Yeah. What you, like you were just saying, being a woman outside of the patriarchy, I was like, what would that even mean? I don't know.
What even mean? I mean, I have some insight. I have like, I'd like to think walking in a woman's body. I walk in a woman's body by birth and by choice. And
same.
So for anyone who walks in a woman's body by choice, by birth, by circumstance, whatever it might be, I think we have a knowing of what that would be like, because we know it's opposite. We know it's contrast. You know, we know what we're pushing off of. And so we don't know it clearly. It's not in the light. It's not known, but we feel it. We sense it. We get it.
Yeah.
Your podcast is called Settling is Bullshit.
Yeah.
And I think what we have settled for as a culture is bullshit.
Yes.
And I think there's something happening here. Yes, it's intuition, but it's so many other feminine qualities. And when I say feminine, I'm not speaking to the gendered feminine or the gendered masculine. It's an energetic. It's
right.
It's a balancing. We have balancing forces in the universe. And because the feminine has been overtly associated with women's bodies, we've cast out the feminine. We've also done so by subjugating women. So we as a culture are now living with half of our wholeness. And we see it play out. I mean, look at the way we're treating Earth, the way we're treating and extracting our resources without recognition for that. What's already in play, what's already in motion. The way that we hoard resources, the way that we hoard wealth, the way that we push people to the margins and then blame them for being there, the way that we use power over individuals and call it potential or success, the way we scale our businesses and growth without questioning why metrics are really in play in the first place. These are all fingers pointing to a system that is so wholeheartedly out of balance.
Yeah. I feel that like in my bones as a small business owner, as someone who is leaning into like, what would it mean to be a heart-centered and responsible and sustainable business owner in the fucking like 21st century and in the political climate that we are currently in. And it is hard to imagine, and it's hard to stay hopeful, especially when massive bullshit goes down, right? And I wholeheartedly agree with you that kind of the system is bullshit. And I guess what intrigues me about this idea of like intuition as activism and intuition as an opportunity to disrupt the system and disrupt the ways in which so many of us settle for how things are, how we think they're supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm delighted and tickled and curious to see where this conversation takes us in terms of like what that might look like. Because I don't think we intuitively want to keep putting up with this fucking nonsense.
No. No. Even those who are benefiting from the system, even those who voted for the system to stay intact, I would like to believe, maybe not on a conscious level, maybe not even on a just below the surface unconscious level, I think we're all fighting for the same thing. We're doing so in very, very different ways.
Ooh, what's the thing that we're all fighting for?
I think we're all fighting for the freedom to be ourselves.
Yeah.
And I think we have different ideologies about what and whom and how we're going to get there, whether it's something we're protecting, something we've never had, something we're trying to create for the masses, something that the few are protecting at the cost of the masses. I think we all want to feel free. And we're hardwired to feel free in our minds and in our bodies. And also, what has informed what freedom actually means? And in our current system, it looks like individuated, egoic power over freedom is like this armor it protects, but it also keeps at bay collective and collaborative freedom.
Right. Yeah. Listening to you, I was just thinking about how what freedom looks like and means in current American culture, especially, is I get to do what I want. Fuck you.
Called rugged individualism.
Yeah. And it's so damaging. I mean, that's where hustle culture comes from. That's where workaholism comes from. That's where, you know, not letting ourselves rest comes from.
This is where the denial of our body's wisdom and denial of our intuition comes from.
Oh,
mind and the ego, you know, it has one track. Assimilate to the herd, maintain your social hierarchy and your standing, and protect yourself against all enemies.
Yeah.
And yet, I think our body's wisdom, I think our intuitive wisdom, I think our the part of us that knows we are connected to something so much bigger and grander and magnificent than we can ever put into words or have language for, knows that that is so short-sighted.
Yeah.
And so there's a different kind of freedom in that.
So what would collective freedom mean?
I don't know.
Oh, okay.
I have some imagination about, you know, what I would like it to be.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm also informed by one lens. So I won't speak on this as a, this is what it has to be. But I can imagine a world where we have collaborative and collective care, where we truly turn toward our community, where we listen, where we ask better questions, where we allow our resources to flow to those who need it in the moment the most.
Yeah.
Where we trust that we will always have enough. And to be fair, there are entire monoliths of people who have never had enough.
Yeah.
For which scarcity is not some ideology. It's a lived reality. And so a reckoning of resource. You know, we have more resources on the planet than we've ever had in the history of the world. More money, more technology, more access to those things, more connection, more conversation, more intellect, more awareness. And yet we have some of the grandest systemic breakdown that we've ever seen as a culture, as a collective global culture. Those two things should not coexist, and they do because we don't have this freedom of sharing and harmonizing with the things that we have because we think if we give away what we have, we'll never get it back.
Right. When we're in this sort of like freedom of I do what I want, it's all about me, mine, then like you said, like we hoard.
We hoard and we get anxious. And so we hoard more to protect our anxiety. And then we get more anxiety.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's terrible. So let's all liberate ourselves by getting more in connection with our intuition.
I think it's a powerful first step.
Yeah. So where do we start to like connect with our intuition?
Well, I think we pay attention. I think we pay attention. And not, there's no two people who are going to define intuition the same.
Yeah. Okay. But how does Andrea today define intuition?
I used to come from the school of thought that intuition was this savior, this always on your side savior that would swoop in and rescue you from despair or discomfort or damaging moments or pain. And I've come to believe that intuition's only purpose is to keep you in the flow of your life. Mm. And your life is going to be anything but light and love. It is going to run you right down the middle of hardship highway, because that is what we are here to contend with. That is what we are here to learn from. And so I've come to appreciate that intuition puts you in the path of least resistance, but it's not without discomfort. It's not without challenge or hardship or heartache.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean it's not intuitive or purposeful.
Okay. So intuition puts you in the path of least resistance.
Yeah. It puts you in flow with your life.
Okay. But the flow of life, I'm just thinking about this as a river, right? Because my mind works in metaphors. And if you say the word flow, that's where it goes, right? That like, if we're living on a river, there are rapids in rivers, right? Yes. There are easy and slow bends in rivers.
Huge boulders, drop-offs.
Yeah.
Still ponds.
Yeah. How boring would life be if it was all just the like lazy river at the water park, right?
Like, I don't think that we would come here. Like, I don't know. I don't have data on that, but I know that, like, you know, if you are, I've said this for years, if all you're interested in is light and love and self-realization from a place of absolute freedom, you don't incarnate into the body of a human because that's not our walk on this planet.
Then you get to be a dog, huh?
Yeah, I have major like soul envy of my animals.
Yeah, like you get to be a really well cared for dog if like that's what you just like somebody else to like feed you and love you and pet you and take care of you. Yeah, you
all day on a cushy faux fur blanket. I often ask her, like, what kind of karma is this? I'm just asking for a friend. How did we get here? How did you get here?
Yeah. Oh, that's delightful. So since we didn't all incarnate as dogs or cats or other just like lovely, happy, chill, well cared for animals. Yeah, we incarnated to be on a journey that includes ups and downs and hardships and range and variety.
Yeah.
And so like, I think for me, one of the ways that I've wrapped my head around all of this comes very secondhand from the Course on Miracles and the general idea being that we're here to move from fear to love.
Hmm.
And when I think about my journey with connecting with my own intuition, which is still an ongoing, unfolding experience, it's leaning into that capacity to trust and lean into love. You know, even if I don't fucking know what my intuition is, it's usually not the part of me that is freaked out.
No.
That is not my actual intuition.
No. I agree with you about that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I often get asked, what's the difference between anxiety and intuition? And I think they could not be more different. They could not be more different. I don't think intuition comes in with alarm bells. Anxiety is a byproduct of our egoic mind that really would prefer absolute control at every bend. If we're in that river of life, anxiety is us hanging on to the boulder because we don't think we're going to survive the impending cliff.
Right.
You know, forgetting that we are perfectly equipped for what's ahead of us.
Yeah. And when I was listening to you, I like wanted to come in with a yeah, but I kept listening. And when I think about like my own relationship with fear and with anxiety and my own relationship with intuition for me shows up before I get to the scary thing or before I get to the anxious place. It says to me, you know, it's the little nudge for me that's like, oh, you don't want to go that way. Like, you don't need to do that. What if you went over here? And then I often, less often nowadays, but historically very often would ignore that because the way that it's telling me not to go is where I think the thing I want is. And then that's where I get all spun out in anxiety.
Yeah. Which I think is how most people relate to their intuition. And it's not to say that isn't intuition. I think it absolutely is. It's the part of us that whispers and nudges and informs and invites and sometimes gently, sometimes not so gently to say this way now, you know, and we are the ones who go kicking and screaming.
Yeah, 100%. I usually have an inkling, and I often, especially historically, would dismiss it because for me, to bring it back to the like patriarchy and the socialization, my intuition wants me to be a like kind of quirky fucking weirdo in the world.
Yeah.
And for years and years and years, I was like, no, I can't do that.
Yeah.
I have to be this thing. I have to be this way to get what I want. If I'm just like weird and sparkly and quirky, here's all of the socialized patriarchal reasons why that's not going to work out. So no, thank you, intuition. I'm going to keep doing this and like live a very stressed out life for a long time.
Hey, just so you, in case you forgot, you are a quirky, sparkly human.
Yeah.
And the part of us that grows up in a conditioned system and then that conditioning gets fortified within our own bodies, we start to replicate it. We start to reproduce it. We start to compound it is the one that says you won't survive if you listen to that part of you. And therein lies the shoving down and the casting into the shadow and rejecting that inner voice. And yet when we get a touch of liberation, and when I say liberation, I mean the internal freedom that we know we are being who we are meant to be. We are being who we came here to be. And I don't feel that 100% of the time, but if I can just touch it for a second, all that fear and anxiety gets put into its place. It has a place that's purposeful. And you see for a second, oh my gosh, my intuition is probably the only source that I can trust to that degree.
Yeah.
Right? Because the system, if we look at the system and we keep saying system, like we're talking about dominant culture. We're talking about the fortification, the codification of dominant culture and how absorbing it is into our everyday life. That we can't ever, I don't know that we will live outside that system in our lifetime.
Right.
So our work isn't to dismantle it in totality, but how do we disrupt it?
Right.
How do we bring some counterbalance? How do we kind of flip it on its head? And listening to your intuition and following that, I would say to the absolute sort of like, you know, I'm flipping off Kate, but in that kind of response, that is liberation.
Yeah.
Itself, to say you don't actually have to play by those rules if you don't want to.
Yeah. So what has that looked like for you?
Well, that's a great question because I think by nature of who I am and how I identify in the world, it's kept me enough outside the system that I've had the privilege to question it, maybe more than others. I don't know. I am a white woman walking in the world in what looks like a heteronormative body, and I am cisgendered. So I navigate in the world benefiting from dominant culture. And yet I'm married to a woman and I work for myself. I've not worked for an employer since, I don't even remember, 2010, most of my adult life. And I have enough resources that I'm financially independent. And I've supported myself and my family for a long time. So I live just enough removed that I get to play with the other side. I get to be in that place and say, you know, it's worth an adventure out here. And not because you need to be queer, you need to identify as a different gender, that you need to work for yourself, because there are millions of people, women especially, for which that's never going to be their walk.
Right.
But they too should have access to feeling a little freer from the things that have bound their truth.
Yeah. Hearing you talk about that as someone who is in many ways quite similar, cisgender, white woman, woman's body, working for myself, coming from a background of enough privilege to have gotten very far in higher education, and hasn't really known true scarcity.
Yeah.
You know, that's the lens that I bring to this conversation. And I think my curiosity is around kind of like what's possible in terms of flipping the bird to this system without having to like go be an entrepreneur?
Yeah, that's a powerful question, because as you're listing those things, I'm thinking, am I really outside the system? I mean, I'm benefiting from the system, right?
Right.
I have higher education. I have no debt. I walk around in the world with mobility and ease. I have generational wealth to my name. Mm-hmm. All things that have afforded me the right to question things, because I don't have scarcity. I don't have physical scarcity in my life. But also is, and I'm asking this, this is maybe rhetorical. I don't know that we can answer this question, but that feeds a little bit into Maslow's hierarchy of needs, which is, I find it to be a deeply problematic framework for self-realization, because it puts people at the top of the dominant culture food chain as those being the closest to self-realization. And that dismisses the majority of the planet. And so is it to say that this has allowed me the freedom, or that this has actually made it that much more imperative that I question the very system I'm in? And it does make breaking with the system hard.
Yeah.
I mean, this is why the majority of white women continue to vote against their own rights, because proximity to power is something we're not afforded. We're not afforded true power, but we can have it through proximity. So we tend to uphold the very systems that demean us in order to maintain access to something we think will liberate us. And yet it will never liberate us.
Right.
Ever. And so how do we break with the system without living in totality outside the system? Well, the system is inside of our bodies.
Right.
It's inside of our bodies. And so I would say, if you are a white woman listening to this, your work is internal. It's internal dismantling and external breaking with solidarity and advocating and fighting for those on the margins.
Yeah.
If you're a Black woman or a woman of color, very different march. Even
right.
Very different walk than we do.
Yeah. 100%. Listening to that, that question that you asked a few sentences ago, and I was just so enraptured that I'm not going to get it right. But basically, like, did this make this possible, or does it make it more imperative for me to buck against it? And I see a both and there, that because I am afforded this experience, it is even more imperative for me as a cisgender white woman to do the internal work, to be cognizant, to have these kinds of conversations in the platform that I have available to me, and to really get intentional about how I am living my life, and whether the sort of small decisions that I'm making on a daily basis are like upholding the bullshit, or trying to the best of my ability to like dismantle a little bit or disrupt a little bit.
Yeah.
One of the big things that has shifted for me in the last year is really starting to consciously make decisions about where I am putting my money.
Mm, yeah, great example.
And like living into my values, in that like if I value community and I value care, that like giving Jeff Bezos my money isn't living into that.
Yeah.
Right? And that doesn't mean that I'd never shop on Amazon, because fucking A, sometimes I don't want to go to the store. But like, and sometimes I can't find the thing that I want. And, you know, like that, it's not realistic to expect myself to live all into any of this perfectly, right? But I've been thinking about like the things that I am just so happy that they exist in the world.
Yeah.
Like Powell's Books here in Portland, Oregon. Or some of the apps that I use that like I can access for free, but if I gave them my money, then that helps to ensure that they continue to exist, and that like those apps that I use are expanding and supporting the values that I do want to encourage in the world, right? Yes. That there are ways that I can make choices, small micro choices, that contribute to the world that I want to create.
Yes. And let's not confuse small with insignificant.
Right.
Which is also a bucking of the system.
Yeah. And to me, because of the position that I'm in and the like level of economic stability that I possess, I've been really looking at, okay, it is $3 more expensive for me to buy this book at Powell's than it is for me to buy this book on Amazon. I would really rather give those $3 to like an independent bookstore. But that was a huge mental shift for me. Sure. That for me was a big step outside of the disrupting the like internalized patriarchal self-sufficient hoarding bullshit.
Sure. But this is exactly what I'm pointing to, that these systems are intrinsic to our daily habits.
Yeah.
Right? If you can connect the dots between why shopping at a local bookshop is a disruption of the patriarchal systems that we're entrenched within, as opposed to buying that thing on Amazon, you get it.
Yeah.
And I was saying to my wife this morning, so many women in my own community, in my own network, who are asking, Andrea, what do I do? What can I do? How do, like, it feels, I feel so powerless. And I playfully, this was behind the scenes, and now it's out in front because I'm going to put this on the podcast. But I said to my wife, you know what they can do? They can fucking hire women. Pay queer women, pay trans women, pay Black women, pay them. Pay them more than you think it's worth. Pay them. Because money is powerful and women use it differently.
Ooh, how so?
We think of it differently. Because if you look at the history, at least in this country, I'll speak to my personal experience, and I think this is common. Yes, my dad was the patriarchy of the house, but mom ran the ship, right? My home was matriarchal in the shadows, patriarchal at the dinner table.
Mm.
My dad never paid a bill in his life. When my mom and dad were both ill, my mom pulled me aside and said, Andrea, you're going to have to sign checks for your dad when I'm not here any longer because he can't sign his own name on bills. And I was like, wait a minute, you've been doing this for 46 years? Mom, what are you doing? I mean, it was such a mind-blowing. Okay, so I say all that to say women have been responsible socially forever. We're responsible for it, whether we chose this or not, systemically or conditioned or by choice. We take care of the home. We take care of the kids. We take care of our community. We take care of our nonprofits. We take care of the ways that money flows from our home out into the world. We take care of it. We take care with our resources. That's been either tasked on us or by us or for us or what have you. So when women have money, one of that kind of funny, ironic, cosmic conditions that we have, who can I take care of?
Yeah.
How can I take care? So women do different things with money. We're also statistically better investors because we have more long-term thinking capacity because we don't have frivolity to our name. We don't have the benefit of novelty in the sense that we haven't had the right to make individualistic choices without it having a massive ramification for our families because we've been tasked with that for so long. So when we invest, we think about the long game. We ride the wave of ups and downs. We're patient. We understand there's something bigger at play that we're aiming for. We're not irrational. We're not using emotion the way that we've been told we are, or intuition the way that we've been sold we are. So pay women. If you want to see the system change, absolutely change the course and the flow of what one of the most powerful resources on our planet does and where it goes.
Yeah.
I'll tie this in, but I've been watching this show on HBO called The Lost Kitchen. It came out years ago, but I'm just now getting around to it, about a woman named Erin French, and she has a tiny little restaurant in Freedom, Maine. I mean, this thing is tiny. And it's very creative and very interesting and playful. And her entire staff are women. They're all white women. I'm going to call that out, but they're all women. And this show was filmed during COVID. She's responsible for all these women's livelihoods in an industry that completely shut down. And there's this great scene where she's talking to these women about what's possible and can we expand our shifts and can we do more outdoor meals and we got to take advantage of the season. And three of the women say, remember, I'm only available in the evenings because I have three kids at home full time. They're all married. And every single one of the women said, remember, I'm available one day a week because I'm also homeschooling right now. I'm also full-time nannying my own children. I'm also full-time caretaking my parents. And we saw in COVID such a downturn in women's rights because women had to go back into the home in a way that we haven't seen in a generation because of the pandemic. All that to say, financial disparity does have a huge impact on the way that we navigate the years to come.
Yeah. To bring it back to intuition, then, we started by sort of talking about how that is a feminine quality or characteristic. And I'm curious about what that means to you.
Sure. Well, one of the qualities of the feminine, again, speaking of the energetics, not the gender, is receptivity. The feminine is deeply receptive. The masculine is deeply active. So what does that mean to be receptive? Intuition is about listening. It's about paying attention. It's about leaning back. It's about not manufacturing unnecessary action, but having this receptivity. You think about the flow of water, the flow of a river. We've been using that metaphor. The water is a deeply receptive conduit for energy. And it has a lot of movement and it has a lot of like energy behind it. It's powerful, but we're so used to activating from our masculine, which is very fiery and controlling and structured and fortified and strict.
Oh no, Andrea, you just blew my mind a little bit. But like when I'm in my little like control freak mind, I'm like a tool of the patriarchy. Like when I'm fucking trying to control everything in my life.
Yeah, we all are.
And that's just going to be helpful for me moving forward from this moment in this conversation that like when I notice that happening, I'm going to pause myself and say, fuck the patriarchy. Let me take a deep breath and connect with my intuition and like what actually is necessary right now.
Something I'm learning from Danny Gardner right now is this process or this practice of leaning back. And she quite literally means leaning back in your chair. Physically, we walk around in the world, at least in this culture, so leaned in, so like urgently leaned into the moment, right? What's the next action? What's the next step? What's my next
move? What do I do?
Power move. What's my next growth move? Whatever. And she suggests, lean back, y'all. Like literally lean your body back. And when you do, every time I do this, your receptivity goes up. Now I can see more physically. I can see more of the room. I can feel my body. I can feel myself take a deep breath. I can feel to my nervous system. This is a very trusting posture because if you're leaned back,
You're exposing your belly.
You're exposing your belly. You're exposing your heart. You're exposing your throat. You're in absolute trust that your physical environment is okay. There's nothing to control or assert or decide in this moment. It's a cool practice. And I've been playing with it for only a month now, but it's remarkable the shift it can have on your thinking mind and on your emotional body.
Yeah. And I just tried to do that and realized that like the chair that I am sitting at isn't good for that. It was very uncomfortable partly for that reason. And then I have this like ADHD stool that's like a balance stool that I sometimes use. And it's also terrible for that. It's very much a like leaning in sort of physical posture. And this is something that I've talked about with a few guests now on this podcast of like how what we are doing with our bodies, very literally, like what is happening with my body? How is my posture shaping the kind of energetic mental things that are happening?
Yes.
And I imagine for folks who might be listening right now in this like really crunchy political moment, in this in-between space, because this is going to come out before chaos happens officially, even thinking about like what would it mean to lean back right now? What would it mean to relax? Because even earlier you were saying like people are like, what do I do? Right? We want to do
something, especially in the face of powerlessness. Either some of us have fallen into a little bit of a despair hole, and that's also reasonable. But yeah, I'm really curious what it would mean to be in the lean back and the intuition in this moment, and how that might be a form of activism. And as I ask myself that question, I'm so curious to hear what happens for you, but I'm going to answer my own question. Is that what I know to be true, having said that out loud, is that when I slow down, I make more deliberate and intentional and long-term impactful choices.
Yes. Well, you're speaking to a life lived in flow with itself, because if there's deliberation, if there's patience, if there's response, not reaction, if there's receptive response, and Danny Gardner calls it waiting to respond, which is human design strategy. That's where she gleans it from, wait to respond. She calls it the art of responding. It's not inaction. It's not passivity. It's informed response. That is the flow of your life. And something that you won't feel when you're tapped into that is friction. You won't feel friction. You won't, it doesn't mean things are going to be perfect.
Right.
You know, for half of our country, we're talking about and endeavoring in the next 4 years into what I can only imagine will be dark days. I don't know. And right. This is something I keep reminding my clients and myself and my partner and my family. All we can do is respond to the moment. And right now, we don't have any information. We have rhetoric, and we have promise, we have threats, and we have suspicions. But we don't actually have the moment. So be equipped, but don't be on guard. Be prepared, but don't be braced.
Yeah.
Don't be so leaned in. In fact, you will glean more knowledge about what to do, how to do it, when to do it, and why if you are leaned back.
Yeah,
everyone has a role to play, no matter what's going on in the world around us. That's part of our walk here. We have a role. We have a particular place in this world that we get to respond from.
Yeah, I'm just having this like delightful moment of epiphany in terms of just like a tool that's actually going to help me when I'm in that impatience and I'm in the like energy of needing results and whatever, you know. I have a like stomp the patriarchy sticker somewhere that's like a horse and it's delightful. And, you know, I think that there's this lovely little moment for me that that's actually going to help me redirect, right? Because I can know that like, oh yeah, I shouldn't be so impatient and I know I'm controlling and whatever. But if I like blame it on the patriarchy... There's just something like really nice there for me of like, oh, I don't want to buy into that system. Let me fucking chill out.
I get that. And what I think you're saying is it's not just to say, oh, F that, right? That's such an externalization. And when we stop there, we assume someone else is going to fix it. Oh, I'm just participating in that, right? But we are participating. We're in it.
Yeah,
whether we want to be or not. So the response becomes, well, what is it doing inside of my own body? How am I placating to that? How am I protecting that? What would it be like to not?
Yeah.
And it's these micro, small moments.
Yeah. So to give listeners something a little bit like to like grasp onto in terms of this, like building a relationship with their intuition, like what has worked for you or people that you've worked with in terms of like building that relationship? Because for so many of us, we've ignored it for so long.
Yeah.
When we sort of bring forward this question of like, okay, yeah, I want to step into the flow of my life. That sounds great. How do I do that?
Like, I know. And every part of me wants to give you like the 4-step process and claim this is the way. And
No. It's not the way. Like, what are some potential doorways that you've encountered that have worked for you or for other folks?
Yeah. For me, the one that I go to a lot is a writing practice. Pen to paper, stream of consciousness, sitting with thoughts can get up into mental chatter very quickly, but even that is intuition. So pen to paper is one of my daily practices.
Yeah.
Walking in nature without my phone. People are always shocked when I tell them I don't take my phone with me. I'm like, what? I'm not going to fall off the planet. Like, where do you think I'm going to go? There's only so far I can get in so much time before my wife is like, maybe I have to go find her. Like, it's fine, y'all. You can leave your phone at home. No distraction, no music, none of that. Just go out for a walk. It's unbelievably powerful to be in nature and to be out in the world without anyone having access to you.
Yeah.
That's that keeping those receptor channels available. You know, are we actually carving out contemplative space in our life where we can pay attention? So many of us are overly consumed with things to do. And when we don't have things to do, we manufacture things to do. And if you don't have anything to do, you can just pick up your phone and now you're doing something. So this becomes a really, I want to say powerful. It becomes a really difficult but needed practice to space and like physical space and time. And even if you have 5 minutes, you know, it's maybe when you're in the shower and that's all you get.
Right.
Right. But where's your mind? Maybe it's when you're in the car, but how are you using it? It's not about productivity or efficiency at all. It's about creating physical space for receptivity. So for me, writing, walking.
Well, so I sort of inadvertently started a really powerful practice that I hadn't really thought of as like creating space for receptivity.
Mm.
But I implemented a practice of a monthly digital detox starting on New Year's Eve last year. I turned my phone completely off on New Year's Eve and spent the whole day not engaging with technology and using it to like clean my house and reflect and like really get quiet and intentional with what had happened in the previous year, what I wanted to sort of set intention around in the year ahead. I use a tool that I got from 12-Step Recovery called a God Box. There's lots of spiritual teachers who've talked about it. But it's basically like I have a little box that throughout the year, when I'm freaking out about shit and I don't know what to do, I write it down, I put it in the box, and I'm like, you handle this. And so New Year's Eve last year, I lit a fire, went through the box, was like really in awe of how much of that had been handled.
Isn't that remarkable?
Yeah. And it was a difficult day. Like there was a solid 2 hours of like, I want to touch my phone. This is hard. Like it wasn't easy, but it was really nourishing. And I decided like, okay, like that was really good. Maybe I'll do it again this month. And so I have taken that practice, and typically the last Sunday of the month now, I turn off my phone and I look at the journaling that I did throughout the month. I do a little summary of like, okay, like what actually fucking happened? How was I doing emotionally? What's been going on? I set some intentions for the month ahead. I look at my intentions from the prior month. And it's been this like really beautiful practice that is also hard. It is hard to say, I'm going to give a whole day to that.
Yeah.
But I love this idea of creating space for receptivity. Like that I can kind of grab my little paws onto more than like connect with my intuition, la la la, right? And so I'm not saying like, hey listeners, like if you want to do that, go for it. I found it really fucking helpful and also really hard, but that carving out intentional space is probably one of the key factors in connecting with our intuition. And I didn't come up with this. I can't remember who added it to my life, but like the idea that I have to get quiet in order to hear myself think.
Yes. Yes.
Like that connecting with intuition starts with getting quiet.
Yes. And if there are things, people, tools in your environment that quite literally make it impossible for there to be quietude, that is within your control. That is within your agency. You have a right, and it's going to feel like cutting off a part of you to turn off
your
phone. Because that's how ingrained, not only the habit, but the impact it has on our hormones and our the way that, you know, happy hormones happen in the brain when we get on our phone. There's all kinds of data that shows we are actually addicted.
So 100%.
What you're doing is bucking an addiction, which is takes a lot of energy.
It does.
But the best part is when you realize at the end of the day that you didn't really miss anything and you survived, and look how much nourishment you got back. It's pretty remarkable. There's a really powerful book called Digital Minimalism.
Ooh.
Cal Newport, I highly recommend. And he doesn't advocate for no technology. That seems silly. We live in such a connected time, and technology offers and affords us so much possibility, but a purposeful use of technology and a purposeful use of our interaction with technology. And that's often the number one thing I find that gets in the way of anyone being in that receptivity mode is tech.
Yeah.
Mostly our phones. Our phones are someone else's agenda. Always.
Totally.
Always. So if we want to listen and pay attention to our body, turn off someone else's agenda. That's the minimum we can do.
Yeah. Like, one of the biggest gifts I've given myself this year in hindsight is that, like, I just started leaving my phone on Do Not Disturb all the time. Like, pretty much all of the time.
Yes.
And especially someone who's ADHD, who has ADHD and is, like, distractible, and that, like, dopamine chasing was kind of running my experience. Yeah. Doing that really has shifted my relationship with my phone away from such a, like, reactive experience to, like, oh, it's getting my attention. It's getting my attention. You can have my attention. Here's my attention. To, like, I put it in a drawer. And then when I'm in between things, I'm like, oh, now is the time to look at my phone and address whatever has come up. And what's coming up for me in this conversation right now is the, like, deep connection between intuition and intentionality.
Yes.
That if I want to be living an intentional life, it means connecting with my intuition. It means carving out space. And that, like, my life, at least, I think my little ADHD brain wants it to be like a minimal whitewater rapid ride. It wants to be, like, fast and, like, woo-woo, party, ah, this is fun. Like, not too scary. I've never actually been whitewater rafting because that seems really scary. But, like, what my more kind of, like, intuitive, intentional, and I think, like, the actual flow of my life wants for me is a lot more chill than that.
Yeah. We're not neurologically equipped for the onslaught of information that we consume on a daily basis.
We're not.
I am convinced the uptick we've seen in anxiety, it's circumstance, it's life, yes. It's also our engagement, and it's our consumption. It's our overproduced consumption of information. Your brain cannot keep you safe from all the ills of the world. It's not to say that ignorance is the choice, because that's not helpful, but that I personally find that the more intentional I am with the way I connect with the things that actually serve me, the less anxiety that I have.
Yeah.
The less I interact with accounts or people or leaders or authors or whoever is in my feed that cause me to question my worth, my selfhood, my growth, my success, my fill in the blank. It's not miraculous to think, oh, no wonder your anxiety goes down. No wonder when you start paying attention, like, what's actually good for me? What do I actually like? What life am I actually built for? And am I living it? Or am I trying to live into something that I'm not?
Yeah.
And where does intuition come in? Well, intuition is that is our key source for all of that information.
Right. And so much of that, this sense of like, what am I personally actually built for?
Mm-hmm.
Means really questioning assumptions about like what success is, what a job is supposed to be, like yes. who and how I'm supposed to be in the world.
Yes.
As someone with like late diagnosed neurodivergence, I spent so much of my life like trying to function in a system that my brain is not wired for. I am really exceptionally good at hyper-focused short bursts of a few hours of getting a massive amount of shit done. And I am not wired for being in a place at a time for like an extended amount of that time.
Yeah.
And there was so much guilt and shame and internalized narrative that I had to unpack in order to start building the life that really is what I am here to be doing and whatnot. And it's interesting to me, particularly in this moment, you know, just a couple years into really making large life transitions and sort of stepping into the path that I think I have been trying, part of me has been trying to reach for my whole life. That idea that you offered earlier of like, there won't be friction. That doesn't mean I don't get anxious, and it doesn't mean that I don't have to wrestle with self-doubt and do the like internal work. But my experience in the last few years of really stepping into that intuition, that intuitive guidance, for me, that connection with source, connection with higher power, whatever you want to call it, has really been this journey of asking myself what I would do if I wasn't afraid and going in that direction and trusting that it's going to unfold. And it has.
Yeah.
And there are a lot of ways in which I see that intuitive connection and guidance and choice as leading me to this moment of being on this podcast and settling as bullshit and fuck the system. You know, so like we started this podcast talking about intuition as activism and not really knowing where it was going to take us. But I genuinely believe that like that's an available option for us.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, post-election, the election was is a clarifying moment. It is for everybody. It's a clarifying.
Yeah.
It's information. It presents options that either weren't or were going to be available, whatever. It has been a clarifier in my life. It's been a clarifier in my wife and I's life. And it's also pointed me to a truth that I've been ignoring for years about what's the right size of life for me. And as you're speaking about this intuition as a kind of reclamation, as a revolutionary way to buck the system, you know?
Yeah.
When we don't let that information in, as hard as it is, as weird as it might be, as much as your ego might go, what? Like, are you sure? Because I was pretty certain before.
Yeah.
As much as we can sit with the paradoxicalness of that, the more free that we get to be. And we are actively in the midst of making some radical choices about how we live, where we live. And we built this big, beautiful dream. We built this house. We built this kind of life that we thought was for us. And it's not. Mm-hmm. And we're having the coolest, most honest, most provocative conversations right now, about who are we really? Where do we belong? What's the right life? What's the right size of life? And where do I want to put my energy and my resources and my time and my interests and my attention? And if I am simply living the life I'm living to stay in step with what I was told I was supposed to be, that is the first little small corner we get to disrupt in ourselves.
Yeah.
And that amount of honesty, I think, has ripples beyond our understanding.
Yeah, 100%. My lived experience with that was spending 13 years in college overall, to become a college professor because that's what I thought I wanted. It seemed cool. Like, I didn't know what I wanted to do with my life. Liked books, was like, this will be all right. I could be good at this. And like, I was. And then I got it. I landed my dream job.
Yeah.
And there was so much about it that was beautiful and that was what I wanted, except it wasn't.
Except it wasn't you.
Yeah, it wasn't me.
There's a difference between I appreciate this and I am this.
Yeah.
And I think the system we're living in right now, we have a lot of appreciation envy, a lot of, oh, I think I want that because it feels good and I like how it looks. And if I try it on, I think it's going to solve something for me versus really paying attention to what am I built for?
Yeah.
Regardless of what the world has told me I am, what am I built for?
Yeah. I love that question. Like, what am I built for? And there's something in that for me as an inquiry question and a self-honesty question that also like takes the guilt and the shame and the I'm broken nonsense out of it. Like when I'm being radically honest with myself, I am not built for being in an office or a 40-hour work week. Mm-hmm. Like I'm just not built for that. And when I can stop feeling bad about that or layering on, for me, one of the big stories was that, like, who do I think I am to not want that or not do that or whatever? Like, when I can set that stuff aside, I can start showing up more fully as myself and doing what I am here to do.
Yes, 100%.
Yeah. And you know, there's a book called Designing Your Life that I'm a big fan of that really helped me in that transition. And I think this idea of like following your passion can be really damaging. And they say that they're not, they don't want you to follow your passion, their passion, your passion. Like they also say, right, like just look at like, what are you good at? What lights you up? And like, what kind of life do you genuinely want to live? And how can you craft a life around that? You know, and so who am I really? Like, I'm a delightful, quirky weirdo who likes to swear and who likes to use big words, but it's really important to me for ideas and information to be accessible. And that means I don't fit in academia. Like, I really like reading shit. I'm insatiably curious. But, like, the way I want to talk about things isn't the way you get to talk about things in academia. And so I have really embraced that, like, I have a lot of valuable stuff to offer. That's why we're here on, like, hello, listener. That's why you're listening. And that wasn't the space for me. But that was a really fucking hard, scary thing to let go of.
For sure. Because you're actively looking directly at the part of the system that hooked you in, that made promises and seduced you with success and power and freedom and status and
title and stability.
Title and stability. And
yeah, I do.
Else, you know?
I do miss being Dr. B. I do. And like, technically, I still am, but I don't actually want anybody to call me that now.
But I would also flip the script that it's not that you didn't fit in academia, it's that academia doesn't fit in you. And I think we're so quick to go, oh, I don't belong there. And then we feel bad.
Yeah, that's what happened.
Yeah, which versus this doesn't actually belong to me.
Mm.
And there's nothing wrong with me. Mm. Nothing wrong with me. It's just a fact of life. This isn't mine.
That's so much more empowered. It's like you're a coach.
It's like I do this for a living.
Yeah.
True.
Yeah. Oh, beautiful. Oh, Andrea, this has been such a lovely, yummy conversation.
Thank you.
Agreed. Yeah. As we sort of wind down, having come on this little journey, this flowy, friction-free, intuitively guided journey of a conversation, do you have any like final thoughts or invitation for our listeners?
Yeah, I do actually. I invite anyone listening to really pay attention to your small corner of the world right now and always. And to, in the words of one of my very dear mentors, as often as you can remember and as best you can, This is not a time for perfection or absolute resolution. But pay attention to where you're already rooted, where you're planted. One of my very favorite quotes from Stephen Cope in The Great Work of Your Life is he says, all you have to do is love what you already love. All you have to do is love your little corner of the world. I've added and see it as enough.
Yeah.
And you have to do it full out and you got to let it go. That's my invitation. Because we all have a small corner, a small place in the human web that we are perfectly suited for, that we have choice and agency within, but we also have unique contributions and gifts to provide. And I think if a majority, I would love the entirety, but if a majority of humans on our planet not only knew that was available, but knew that it was already within them, I think we would experience a very different planet.
Yeah.
You don't need to be bigger than you are, but you do need to be all that you are. So that's what I would offer.
I love that. And if listeners love that and want more of that from you, how do they find you?
Yeah, you can go to my website, bravercoach.com. And I run an online community. It's free to join. You can contribute a little bit each month if you want to, but that's a choice, called the Practice Community. It is for women identifying folks to have a space to land and where we can talk about our small corners and the choices we're making and the actions we're taking and the ways in which we're navigating our corner at this time in the world.
Awesome. And those links will obviously be in the show notes.
Thank you.
And then my favorite question to end with is, what brings you joy?
I love that question. Right now at this moment, you know what brings me the most joy in the whole world? My morning coffee.
Great.
Had a overhaul of my morning coffee. Thanks to you, actually. You were in my home for an event and you asked for a steamer. And I forgot that I had one, a milk steamer, sitting tucked in the back of a nook. And now every morning I make a French press and I steam milk with cardamom and cinnamon and I sit in front of the fire. And it has become such a life-giving, nourishing ritual. And it brings me boundless joy. And it's the smallest thing on the planet. And I love it to bits and pieces.
Yes. Oh, I love that so much. Both because I got to contribute, but also because, like, joy can be big and it can be small, right? This is a podcast all about claiming our joy. Like, my message and mission is very much about being a little joy pixie in the world and encouraging people to lean into joy. And I love how savoring and presence around something just like beautiful and small is bringing you so much joy.
Yeah. I would add that joy is small. It's small to the outside naked eye. But when you're in the middle of it, its expansiveness moves beyond big because it has a quality that affects us on a cellular level. Joy, hope, love, all of these beautifully bountiful, abundant words, these are all expansive experiences that are big, bigger than bigger than big.
Bigger than bigger than big. Awesome. Andrea, thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you, Kate.
Thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, please help me grow the podcast by subscribing, leaving a review, and sharing it with anyone you think would benefit from hearing it too. Your support means the world to me. If you'd like to get updates about new episodes, posts, and offerings, please visit settlingisbullshit.com to subscribe to my newsletter. You can also find information there about working with me one-on-one to build your most amazing life. Until next time, remember that I believe in you and that you are fucking awesome.